Hi, everyone. Well, yesterday was a blessing for the Jewish people. It really was. Three hostages returned home alive. Romy Gonin, age 24, Emily Damari, age 28, and Doron Steinbrecher, age 31, they're all back with their families now, after 471 days in captivity. They are the first of what we hope will be a return of all the remaining 94. The freeing of captives goes deep in the Jewish psyche. You can find stories about freeing hostages all the way back in the book of Genesis. And of course, the story of the Exodus from Pharaoh's enslavement, which we started reading from the beginning in this week's Torah portion. The Jewish sages considered the freeing of captives to be amongst the highest mitzvot, commandments, that a community can perform. The core of the Israeli social contract is that no one gets left behind enemy lines. It's the imperative on which the solidarity of Israeli society is built. And we saw it play out with the release of these three young women yesterday, the minute-by-minute updates that had the whole country hanging on, the helicopter that was carefully prepared with blankets and water, the elite army unit that escorted them home, the special facility that has been set up to receive them and their families and, we hope, future hostages. We find in the Talmud the phrase, Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Beze. All Israelites are responsible for one another. And so some things are priceless. I'm bracing myself for this roller coaster now. We know some hostages are alive, but we also know that some are not. Which families are getting back alive their loved ones? And which families are about to find out that they're only receiving a body? It's going to be an agonizing process, holding our breath with every name that gets released coming out of Gaza. There's no greater gift than getting them back. Whether each hostage goes home or gets buried with honor, you can't put a price on that. In some sense, anything is worth that. The price in real terms, though, is steep. We're in the opening moments of a plan that is slated to last for months, and there are a number of ways to look at this deal. There are positives and negatives, reasons for optimism and for pessimism. So let's do three things here. Explain the terms of the deal, which has three phases. Then get back into some of the back and forth and what it means. And then get into a little bit of the why now and what's next in terms of the very messy politics that brought this about. My key takeaways are that this is the only way to get the hostages back. And this is a huge win for Hamas in a lot of ways. And this deal does not end the war. So there's a deeply pessimistic take here, but also some room for optimism. Skepticism is warranted, and also hope. Whether we're correct in our pessimism or optimism depends a great deal on what happens in the near and far future, which of course we can't know. This could be the game changer that moves everyone towards a better future. Or with Hamas still in power in Gaza and a couple thousand Palestinian terrorists getting released from prison, this deal could fall apart at any moment. So like a good Jew and a good Middle Eastern analyst, I can hold seemingly contradictory perspectives at the same time. But from the humanitarian angle, count me completely uncynical. By the way, I am booking speaking slots for this winter and spring and into the summer. I specialize in current events, of course, and also the history of Zionism, and I have a fun and fascinating series on unsolved Jewish mysteries. You can find out more at jewidonknow.com/teaching and reach out to me at jewidonknowpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free Substack newsletter. That's at jewidonknowpodcast.substack.com. My latest article was about the times when Arabs and Jews saved each other's lives, which seemed a nice sentiment to hold on to in the midst of this terrible conflict. So on to today's episode. I'm your host, Jason Harris, and this is Jew I Don't Know.
I would say to young people that we can do everyone our share to redeem the world.
The deal at hand is a complex arrangement of three phases with multiple moving parts. The first phase begins now. It's a temporary ceasefire lasting 42 days. After yesterday's three, 30 more hostages will be released in batches every week. Most of the hostages will be alive and include female soldiers, children, the elderly, and sick. And this is an important point. Israel is not getting all the hostages back in one fell swoop. They're going to trickle in over the next 6 weeks and in the months after, and we won't know who is coming out next until 24 hours beforehand. So as I said, it's going to be agonizing. In exchange, Israel will release around 1,900 criminals from prison. It's important to acknowledge that there's no relevancy here. This is not a hostage exchange or even a prisoner of war exchange. This is Israel releasing criminals to get back hostages who never should have been taken in the first place. Now, not all of these prisoners are terrorists, and Israel is not releasing terrorists captured in Israel on October 7th. But they are releasing people captured inside Gaza over the past year, as well as terrorists serving previous major sentences, including life terms for acts of terrorism, along with a variety of other people in jail for various offenses. Also during this phase one, Israel will begin withdrawing from major population centers in Gaza and allowing Palestinians to begin moving back home. Israel will not yet be leaving the Philadelphia corridor that forms the border between Egypt and Gaza, and which was a major sticking point for both sides in previous rounds of negotiations. Phase one is also intended to see another surge of humanitarian aid enter Gaza, and we're seeing that happen already. Now, if all goes according to plan, the negotiations will begin for phases two and three at the halfway point of phase one. Phase two will be another 42-day period, releasing the rest of the hostages, more Palestinian prisoners, and Israel completely withdrawing from Gaza. Phase three is expected to be an exchange of dead bodies, a permanent ceasefire, and a plan to launch a period of reconstruction in Gaza to last 3 to 5 years. All the border crossings will be open to facilitate the controlled movement of goods, services, supplies, and people. There's a vague notion that this period will be supervised by international organizations and other countries, but it's unclear who will rule Gaza. Israel completely opposes Hamas, of course, but Netanyahu's government is also against the Palestinian Authority taking over. Hamas still has 94 hostages today. 91 of those are from October 7th. Of that 94, Israel knows that 34 are dead, and it's very likely that there are more. There are two children, Kafir and Ariel Bibas, ages 2 and 5, along with their parents. 10 women, 81 men, the oldest hostage is 86. 84 hostages are from Israel, 8 are from Thailand, 1 from Nepal, and 1 from Tanzania. There were also 4 hostages who predate October 7th. 2 mentally ill civilians captured in 2014 and 2015, and 2 dead Israeli soldiers whose bodies were captured in 2014. Israel announced 2 days ago that one of those bodies, Oron Shaul, was recovered in Gaza during a secret operation, bringing to a close a long 10-year wait by his family. Getting even one hostage back is a victory, and it's infuriating that Israel is even expected to pay a price, as if this is some kind of legitimate transaction. It isn't. But Israel is doing it anyway, because this deal is probably the only way to get the hostages back. Israel has always pursued 2 major objectives in Gaza. So one is completely defeating Hamas, and the other is getting the hostages back. The prevailing theory was that increasing the military pressure on Hamas would force them into a corner. They would end up releasing the hostages to save themselves or achieve some other military benefit. And there were times when that theory seemed to play out, like for the first hostage release deal that was back in November of 2023. And there's no doubt that Israel's military accomplishments contributed to this current deal. But it's become clear that military pressure isn't enough. Until now, Hamas has refused to release any hostages and instead executed those who were about to be rescued. Remember that for all the obsession with pressuring Netanyahu to strike a deal, it is Hamas that has rejected every single ceasefire put on the table since that first exchange. So since Hamas won't voluntarily return the hostages, and since it's unlikely that a military operation will free any of them, the only way to bring them home is to strike a deal that Hamas will accept. So here we are. Around 25% of Israelis oppose the deal, and it's a left-right divide. The American-Israeli politician Michael Oren says that the left wants to end the war, and the right wants to end Hamas. It's not that the right doesn't want the hostages home. It's that they think the price to get them back right now is too high. The price to get the hostages back is indeed high. Nearly 2,000 prisoners, many of them with blood on their hands. A ceasefire that takes the military pressure off Hamas. Israeli withdrawal from parts of Gaza that cost hundreds of Israeli soldiers' lives, and which will now allow Hamas to swarm back into the space. A surge in humanitarian aid that is going to be stolen by Hamas. So there are a number of ways to look at this. By any objective measure, Israel has outright won this October 7th campaign of the war. Taken at face value, Hamas achieved almost none of its objectives. They didn't eliminate Israel. They didn't complete a genocide against the Jews. They didn't inspire a regional uprising that crushed the Jewish state. They didn't take back Jerusalem. They didn't destroy the Abraham Accords or the peace treaties with Egypt and Jordan. They did, however, bring about the destruction of their allies in Lebanon, Syria, and Iran. They lost the majority of their own fighters. They lost almost all of their weapons and infrastructure and don't have an easy way to rearm or rebuild. But by another metric, this is a huge win for Hamas simply because they survived and they remain in control of Gaza. On October 7th, Hamas was Israel's weakest enemy with far less strength than Hezbollah or Iran. Now Hamas is basically the last one standing. They held out through 15 months of war with Israel, something that no army has ever before achieved. And they were able to because of the Israeli hostages and the Palestinian human shields. Hamas has demonstrated the effectiveness of both. Hamas scored another big win in PR. They inspired an international campaign to turn Israel into a pariah state. They didn't quite get there. The UN, the human rights groups, the college campuses, the media, Western politicians, none of them were able to stop this war to secure a victory for Hamas. But they were successful in prolonging the war, causing more suffering for Palestinians and Israelis, legitimizing Hamas, and turning Palestine into a major international cause that enables Hamas to now claim victory. With the ceasefire in place and Hamas no longer worried about airstrikes, they're emerging from the humanitarian zones and the hospitals and the schools, which they've been using this whole time. There was no genocide. There was no starvation. But Hamas, too, with their helpers in the West, have probably made those lies permanent. The anti-Zionist ideology will continue to deliver Hamas moral and political support, and that will be a valuable resource as Hamas maintains its control over Gaza and its war against Israel. Militarily, Hamas is down and out now. They've lost, by some estimates, 80 to 90% of their fighters and military capabilities. Reports are that they are recruiting untrained teenagers, which has added around 20,000 new fighters to their ranks. Yet they don't have the strength to face off against the IDF. But they do have the guns necessary to hold on to Gaza. And now that Palestinians are moving back home, especially to the north, Hamas will get several hundred thousand more human shields. And they'll take advantage of the billions in aid and humanitarian supplies that are going to pour into the Strip. With time, they'll be able to rebuild and rearm. And then there's the 1,900 prisoners getting released. This is huge for Hamas. It's a major victory for them to take credit for. Because they get to say to the Palestinians, we're the ones who got our people out, not the Palestinian Authority or anyone else. So it's a huge boost to their image. And it's another demonstration of the effectiveness of taking Israeli hostages. Freeing murderers to get back innocent civilians is a terrible injustice, and it's incredibly dangerous. And remember that we've been here before. In 2011, Israel released more than 1,000 prisoners to get back one hostage. Many of them went on to kill more Israelis, including on October 7th. One of those released was Yahya Sinwar, the mastermind of October 7th. So is there a future Yahya Sinwar now getting out of prison? You can be sure that some of these 1,900 prisoners will target Israeli civilians again. This is a big part of the Israeli right's opposition to the deal. They say, yes, we want to get the remaining 97 hostages back, but you have to weigh that act against the possibility that hundreds more will die from the released prisoners and a rearmed Hamas. And recent history is a major point in their favor. And then there are other Palestinians. As I've said many times on this podcast, Palestinian life will never get better as long as Hamas is in power in Gaza. All that money and supplies coming their way is going to end up in Hamas's hands. And Hamas is going to use everything they can get their hands on for rebuilding their military, not for improving the lives of Palestinians. Which means that anything that does get rebuilt is just going to be used again as military infrastructure, which means it's just going to get destroyed again whenever the next round of fighting kicks off. The next generation will be radicalized with jihadism and anti-Semitism, just as the last few have been. But now we're all jaded enough to know how this plays out. Israel will get blamed for all of it. So this deal presents a great danger for Israel. Not getting back all the hostages at once risks losing them if the ceasefire falls apart at any point. The threat of the released prisoners back out in the wild puts Israelis at risk. The ability of Hamas to rebuild itself and strike again is a major threat. The multiple phases of this deal feel very precarious. There's a lot of politics and geopolitics happening here. Conventional wisdom says that it was Donald Trump who brought this hostage deal home. He is taking all the credit and all but demanding a Nobel Peace Prize. He was certainly the closer. His demand that there would be hell to pay for both Hamas and Israel if there was no deal by today's inauguration put significant pressure on both sides to accept. But Biden also deserves credit. He and his team have spent months putting in the painstaking groundwork to make this happen. And we know that Biden and Trump's teams worked closely the last couple weeks to get this deal over the line. So there's short-term politics here and long-term. In the short term, this deal is a huge political risk for Netanyahu. And that's because the 25% of Israelis who oppose the deal are his people that he has to defy. He's made a career out of showing his base how he stands up against American presidents, but now he caved into one who wasn't even president yet. Thus, whatever Trump was offering or threatening, it must have been something big enough to overcome Netanyahu's usual instincts. We'll come back to that. And then there's the Israeli far right. The two religious Zionist groups have always threatened to leave the coalition if Netanyahu approves a hostage deal. They argue that the imperative is to defeat Hamas, refuse to release Palestinian prisoners, and for Israel to reoccupy Gaza and rebuild Jewish settlements there. They argue that more Israelis will die in the future without that, and that hundreds of Israeli soldiers have already sacrificed their lives to defeat Hamas. One of the religious Zionist parties, led by Itamar Ben-Gvir, did leave the coalition. That didn't collapse the government, but it reduces Netanyahu's majority, so that makes his government much more unstable. The other religious Zionist party, led by Bezalel Smotrich, is staying put for now, on the condition that Netanyahu continue the war once Phase 1 is over. That is, no Phase 2 or 3 until Hamas is defeated. Netanyahu is noncommittal. He's committed to the hostage deal, but is also promising that the war isn't over until Hamas is completely destroyed. So the question is, what Trump promised Netanyahu? We know why Hamas went for the deal. A combination of Israel's military victories, the loss of its allies around the Middle East, and the realization that they would definitely not get a better deal under Trump than under Biden. So maybe Trump promised to help Netanyahu fulfill his own promise to the Israeli right to expand the West Bank settlements and even annex the territory. That could appease the right to secure their support for ending the war in Gaza if they thought they were getting what they wanted in the West Bank. But that probably wasn't it. Expanding the settlements would undermine what Trump desperately wants, which is a huge diplomatic deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel that he can take credit for. Again, chasing that Nobel Peace Prize. So maybe Trump promised American forces in support of a war against Iran, or at least a massive strike on its military and nuclear targets. But it probably wasn't that either. Israel has demonstrated the ability to strike Iran on its own right now. And with Iran's axis of resistance all but defeated, there's no need for a regional war. For the moment, Iran is laying low. So if it's not those two things, then it's probably likely that Trump promised not to stand in the way of Israel continuing the war with Hamas. We know how much Trump loves to do the opposite of whatever Biden does. And for sure, Netanyahu doesn't want any more heckling from the American president about not escalating or ceasefiring or pursuing a Palestinian state. Trump's promise satisfies Netanyahu because he'll get to keep his promise of total victory over Hamas. And maybe in exchange, he'll stop trying to appease the far right with plans for annexing the West Bank that will scuttle a deal with Saudi Arabia. So one scenario here is that Netanyahu continues to pursue phases 2 and 3 that could collapse the government if more right-wing parties leave. But in that case, Netanyahu's opponents have said that they'll step in to keep the government intact in order to see the hostages returned. After that, though, they'll bolt. But by then, Netanyahu might be riding a wave of popularity from the hostage return, so he'll just call for new elections, betting that Israelis will keep him in office. It seems a safe bet that Hamas will break the ceasefire at some point, providing the justification that Israel needs to resume the war. Hamas hasn't changed. They're loudly declaring that their goals remain the same as before. And so if there's any hope for a better future and a safe Israel, Hamas needs to be fully and completely defeated at some point. But with their declared victory over Israel now, and remaining in charge in Gaza, it seems the best case scenario here is only that we've bought some time until the next war erupts. So even if there is a ceasefire that lasts for several weeks here, even a few months, you can be sure that both sides are rapidly positioning themselves for the next battle. Hamas is greatly weakened, for sure, but they're not out. As long as they're in control of Gaza, there's no peace. And so we have much the same dilemma as before. Do you end the war, or do you end Hamas? With the hostages home, much of the pressure on Israel will be relieved. Trump will get the credit for the deal that brought them back, which is what he wants. The Israeli right will get to continue the war against Hamas, which is what they want. Netanyahu will get to stay in power, which is what he wants. Hamas will get to continue their war against the Jews, which is what they want. More war means more propaganda about genocide, more pummeling Israel on the world stage, and more misery for the Palestinians while Hamas declares victory. So this is a temporary ceasefire, not a permanent end to war. Hamas has not been defeated, nor have they surrendered. Without that, there's no realistic path to reforming or rebuilding Gaza. And there is anyway no vision for a post-Hamas Gaza. Netanyahu rules out the Palestinian Authority, which is probably the only entity that could run Gaza with international support. The West and the Saudis are still pushing for a Palestinian state, which seems an impossibility. So now we wait. 6 weeks for the remaining 30 hostages from Phase 1 to all be released, and then we'll see whether Israel and Hamas can get to Phases 2 and 3. The United States, Qatar, Egypt, and others are making big promises about closely monitoring the negotiations and making sure that Phases 2 and 3 get implemented and that Hamas especially holds to the agreement. And in the meantime, the entire country is embracing the return of the 3 hostages. It's a show of solidarity that you find so rarely in the world today. This deal is immensely painful for Israel and promises a great deal of risk. But the majority of Israelis are willing to collectively shoulder that responsibility in order to fulfill the larger one of freeing their loved ones from captivity. They are upholding the fundamental principle of Zionism and the Jewish state to rescue Jews and to leave none behind. All Israelites are responsible for one another. At the same time that the 3 hostages were arriving in Israeli hands yesterday, I was attending a bris, the Jewish naming ceremony for a brand new baby. So that makes 4 Jews brought into the light, into the embrace of their families and friends and community of people around the world. And for that, we can truly say, Am Yisrael Chai, the Jewish people live. As always, I'm at JewIdon'tKnow.com, and my email is JewIdon'tKnowPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you next time.